Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with Chartered Global Management Accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Editorial Director Jack Hagel. In today's episode, we discuss the importance of cultural intelligence with David Livermore, the president of the Cultural Intelligence Center in East Lansing, Michigan. David is the author of 9 books on cultural intelligence and global leadership. His book, Leading with Cultural Intelligence, was a Washington Post bestseller. Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jack.
You recently spoke about cultural intelligence at the AICPA's Financial Planning and Analysis Conference in Las Vegas. I'd like to ask you what cultural intelligence is, but let's talk about some of the myths of cultural intelligence. Your presentation spent some time on what cultural intelligence isn't. So let's get those misconceptions out of the way.
So to start with, cultural intelligence is quite simply the ability to work effectively across different cultures. And a few of the myths that we've discovered, both as we've researched this globally and just practically, as I observe different organizations around the world, one is the assumption that international experience leads to a higher level of cultural intelligence. And without question, if it's done well, there's no substitute for hands-on experiences working with international clients or colleagues to help you understand different ways of approaching the world of finance. But the challenge is, what was the nature of that international experience? When you traveled those places, what did you encounter? Were you just with other people like yourself? Were you only in your U.S. company's overseas office or European company's overseas office? Or did you actually encounter the local culture? So that's probably the most profound myth that we see in influencing a lot of companies as they approach this, is just assuming that if they rotate people internationally, then they're going to have a higher level of effectiveness working across cultures. Perhaps one that's more interesting for your audience, though, the second myth that we see is the assumption that technical competence leads to success regardless of where you go. And you know, in your world especially, I can imagine that technical precision is an incredibly important thing for the world of finance and accounting, financial planning. But the soft skills that often allow you to then bring that expertise and make it valuable in the places where you go is undermined if you don't have some measure of cultural understanding to go with it. And maybe one more that could be interesting is the assumption that emotional intelligence, that is just an ability to read and detect your emotions and others, automatically will lead to higher levels of cultural intelligence. And I understand why people think that, because clearly, in part, what we're getting at with cultural intelligence is understanding other individuals and the way that they approach their work and relationships. But the very things that cause me to make those assumptions when I'm working with my own familiar cultural context might mean something entirely different in another cultural context.
You break cultural intelligence into 4 areas. What are they, and how did you arrive at those 4 areas?
So my colleagues and I at the Cultural Intelligence Center, that reflect academics from a variety of universities around the world, began with asking, is there an actual form of intelligence that can be measured and that can predict the way people will work across cultures? So we began, before even discovering the 4 areas, we looked at other forms of intelligence like emotional intelligence, social intelligence, practical intelligence. But then we did surveys of thousands of global professionals around the world and looked for what were the recurring characteristics that emerged among those who could move in and out of many different cultural contexts and have some measure of effectiveness. And that's what then led us to these 4 capabilities.
Is cultural intelligence more important now than it was, say, 20 years ago?
I think so. I think.
And why is that?
Well, in part, I think we've never become more mobile and globally connected. So technology has allowed companies that used to only be based in one place to pretty much be focused on clients and team members that were there. Whereas today, you can be a solo entrepreneur and being doing business across the world. So I think this used to be primarily reserved for people that were working in high-level executive functions with a big multinational company. And of course, that still it's relevant for them. But today, you might be a solo accountant working with a small size business and be interacting with a client or a supplier overseas.
So what's the difference between individuals and organizations that succeed in today's globalized multicultural world and those that fail? Is it cultural intelligence, or is there more to it than that?
For sure, it's more than that. I'm not a silver bullet guy that says, oh, if you just do this right, everything else will be fine. Of course, their financials have to be in order. Of course, there needs to be business strategy. You need to pay attention to organizational culture. But we were interested in the specific slice of, is there something that's consistent about the individuals that can move across lots of different cultural contexts and do it well? And that's when these four capabilities emerged.
What are some of the biggest cultural gaffes people tend to make, and what can they do to overcome them?
So I was just talking to some individuals this morning about this. One individual told me that he comes from a U.S. company, was interacting with a Japanese client in Japan, seemed to be going really, really well, and suddenly one of his colleagues put a bottle cap on the business card of the executive that was running the meeting, and he didn't notice it initially, the American guy didn't, but then suddenly saw that the nonverbals were seeming to seem very discomfort, and later discovered, as we often teach people, that business cards are something that are supposed to be treated with a whole lot of respect because it says something about the individual's role. So it seemed like this was to them an implicit message that says we disrespect you. So there's some of those like simple everyday things. We don't actually focus a whole lot on that as we talk about cultural intelligence. Of course, there's a few taboos to avoid. We're more interested on things like what are the different expectations people have. So here's an interesting one. We were just working with a multinational company who said one of the leadership competencies that they wanted in their global leaders all across the world was to have them act like an owner. No matter where you are in the company, if you're in a leadership role, you need to act like an owner. And I immediately resonated with that. I have some entrepreneurial pursuits in my background. I want the people that I hire to act as if the money they spend is their own money. And that's to a large degree what this company had in mind. But some of their colleagues in a different part of the world said, do you understand that in our context, owners are individuals who are getting drunk all day out on the golf course, randomly calling in marching orders that might have nothing to do with our business success. Why would I want to tell my leaders that they ought to act that way? So they understood what was behind the idea of act like an owner, but it communicated a message that was very different than was there. So I think the vast majority of the gaffes usually come down to different expectations about what something means.
So what advice do you have for managers trying to encourage cultural intelligence amongst their staff? I would imagine there's a fine line. If you're in a meeting with a subordinate who doesn't display cultural intelligence, how do you correct them without sort of seeming like a micromanager? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So I think part of it is it can't be a one-off kind of approach to how you develop it. And so you're right, it probably isn't going to be helpful just one time in a conversation to bring it up. I would say the organizations that are doing this best, it's built right into their performance metrics. And I don't mean that you're harshly evaluating people based upon their cultural intelligence, but at least it's a point that gets measured each year when you do performance appraisals. So that way it kind of creates a natural way for managers to bring it up and talk about it. I also think it's something that can be implicitly affirmed across the organization, where when somebody gets hired who does demonstrate cultural intelligence, you make that a part of the announcement. Hey, part of why this individual is going to be so helpful to us is they bring an acumen that makes them able to work with clients in lots of different places around the world.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. What are some things that organizations can do to create harmony, maybe, and understanding between different cultures within their own organization? Say I'm a multinational that has a division in China and then one in Germany and then one in the U.S. Those are three very, very different cultures. How can organizations work to make sure that everybody's on the same page culturally without, suffocating their employees?
Yeah, it's a great question, because what typically happens is a multinational corporation will have one culture that dominates all the rest. And usually it's the culture of origin. If it's a German company, then it's just to be expected that individuals from that company, regardless of where they're based, are going to kind of accommodate that. The ones that are truly becoming global and culturally intelligent are figuring out a way to develop a fusion of all the different cultures that are there. Because one of the things that we found is you're going to have preferences that exist across differences. So for example, you're going to have direct versus indirect communicators, or you're going to have individuals who come from an individualist orientation where they've always just kind of thought the way I demonstrate my competence is I take initiative and I speak up in a meeting, as compared to a collectivist culture where they've been socialized that you ought to be more deferential to people who are in senior authority. The person with a unique idea might be viewed suspiciously. And what usually happens is whatever the dominant culture in a multinational, it shrouds the difference that isn't there. So for instance, if it's a Chinese company, which would typically be a very collectivist culture, usually it's just assumed everyone is going to follow the collectivist norm. If they truly want to be multinational, then they ought to say, how do we also allow space for the individualist to speak up here and create a fusion of the best of both, to lean on the individualist to help them with people taking personal initiative, but to lean on the collectivist to help with consensus building.
So this brings up a really good point because, you know, up until this point in this conversation, we've really focused on different cultures around the globe. You can have different cultures within the same organization, sometimes within the same building. So cultural intelligence isn't just, you know, understanding to bow in one country or to shake hands in another country. Describe the kind of cultural intelligence people need sometimes in their own organization.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're right. The emphasis tends to be on how do you get the Germans to work better with the Koreans, which is certainly an appropriate application. Cultural intelligence has been researched and applied just as much in terms of functional differences. How do you get engineers working together with accounting, working together with marketing? How do you get two different business units understanding each other? Many of the companies that we work with around the globe are encountering significant generational differences, and you might have those kinds of things happening. We are dealing with an Indian company right now that say most of their management still function from a very top-down orientation, but many of their young professionals that are joining them have grown up in homes that don't have nearly the same level of hierarchy. So you don't even have to be dealing with someone that has a different passport to have somebody who has a different cultural background.
So with that, let's zero in on why cultural intelligence is so important to finance and in particular accountants. Mm.
So the top two reasons that any organization prioritizes cultural intelligence, and I think the same is true for the world of accounting and finance, is diverse markets and a diverse workforce. So few and far between are the organizations today that are going to be able to deal with a customer base that is solely individuals from the same cultural background as oneself. And likewise, they're going to have a diverse workforce that's coming together. So I think, you know, figuring out how you most successfully do an audit, how you most successfully approach something like forecasting has to account for this both from an external customer standpoint as well as internally.
And so that requires understanding of a language and of a style of each different department, correct?
Yeah, negotiations, decision-making, who's going to make the decision? Yeah, across each department, it's going to be there. And granted, there's probably some functions for which it's more appropriate, but any business has to pay attention to the bottom line. So I would say it's uniquely important to people in the world of accounting and finance because we're going to care very much about whether or not numbers are attended to in ways that we deem to be appropriate.
Well, let's talk about the bottom line. What are some of the costs of not adjusting cross-culturally?
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of it is opportunity costs. So the cost might be that I just lose an account, that I don't have the opportunity, or that my behavior implicitly gave a message that this is an organization that doesn't understand the way other cultures are there. I think some of us may come from cultural backgrounds that also work at a disadvantage when we go into a different culture because, hey, cultural intelligence has to work both ways. So I might have to work extra hard, for example, as an American to build trust in certain places around the world because of the ugly American syndrome that's there. There might be some of that that exists too for a Chinese business person going into Japan where there might be some long-term animosity for what's there. So to me, that's the biggest one. It's the loss of opportunity, but it's also I may truly misunderstand what is going on in negotiating a contract if I don't have some kind of insight into this.
In your presentation and just earlier in this conversation, you spoke about the differences between direct and indirect communication. Explain how that plays out when different cultures are involved.
So Jack, if I can back into that question on direct versus indirect, one of the pushbacks that people will often give to me over this topic as a whole is to say, isn't this basically about respect? You just need to respect other people, even if they don't go about their lives and work the way you do. And hey, I get it. I think respect is a great starting point. The challenge is even our notions of how we convey respect are deeply rooted in terms of cultural behavior. So that's where we come up with this direct indirect. So as a guy who grew up on the East Coast of the US, I would say the best way I can respect you, Jack, is if there's a conflict, to name the elephant in the room, as we might say. And I'm going to be diplomatic. Hopefully I won't come off as a jerk, but I'm not going to use the whole compliment sandwich if the main point of the thing is we need to talk about this issue. For many cultures around the world, in fact, the vast majority of cultures around the world, the most respectful way to address a conflict is to say, I respect that you have enough intelligence to know that there's a conflict going on, just as I know there is. So instead of explicitly stating that, let's acknowledge we're both smart enough to figure that out and harmoniously figure out a way to save face and resolve the conflict. So respect, sure, but the very ways that you go about expressing respect look very different.
Let's talk about the receiving end. Now, we've talked about making sure that you're mindful of your culture and intelligence, mindful of another culture that you're working with. What do you do when you encounter somebody who's maybe not displaying cultural intelligence towards you? Maybe it's a guest, somebody that you're doing business with, who's in your country, in your building. How do you respond to that?
So I'll affirm something I said earlier, and that's cultural intelligence should be a two-way street. So, you know, wherever I find myself in the world, I'm challenging that audience to think about how they behave with cultural intelligence. But as you've aptly noted, we're all in situations where we're not on the receiving end of cultural intelligence. I think the question has to be framed based upon what's the outcome you're after. So it might mean you just need to grin and bear it. Here's somebody who clearly doesn't have much cultural smarts in terms of how they interact, but it's not going to be a deal breaker for me. I'm just going to endure it. If it's a situation where you say, look, this is not going to lead to a good joint venture, this is not going to lead to a good working relationship, then I think there may be ways that it's going to need to be addressed. That's where you're going to have to use your own cultural intelligence to even determine how to address it. It might be that talking to a more senior member first about the idea and the challenge is a way to go about it. So I think it really comes down to what's the outcome and then what's the most successful way to get at it, and then to determine how important it is for you to challenge the cultural ignorance that you receive on the other end.
So really, cultural intelligence on the receiving end is just knowing that others may not have cultural intelligence.
Yeah, that's great. You're right. And I think as I deal with a lot of people who are pretty culturally intelligent, I often tell them one of the first ways you have to apply your CQ, as we call it for short, is to people who don't have CQ. You know, how do I just give positive intent, say they're not necessarily willfully trying to offend me, they just don't understand that what they said is very appalling and offensive.
So I imagine humor could be either a great face saver, an icebreaker, or it could be kind of a minefield. Tell me about that.
You're exactly right. So when in doubt, don't do it. Maybe it's comfortable for you to tell that particular joke or to use profanity or something in a work setting. If you're not sure, just don't go there. But to your other point, there are ways that I try to test it out a little bit, because some of the discomfort that exists when you're interacting across cultures can be eased by a little bit of laughter. So pay attention. One way to even approach it is if you're with a group of colleagues from a different part of the world, ask them, what would be an appropriate joke in your context? Let me share one from mine, so that you've already kind of laid out that we realize you might not even find this funny. It can actually be a fun way to kind of discover different cultural versions of what they appear to be funny.
So for accountants listening today, what are a few things they can do to change their behavior to become a little bit more culturally intelligent?
My first recommendation would be to start with asking, might there be some opportunities that I have missed or I have not taken advantage of because I didn't have a higher level of cultural intelligence or somebody else on my team? So just step back and calculate, what are the missed opportunities, or more importantly, the new potential things that could happen if we could work more effectively across cultures? It might be even writing some of those down. More specifically than that, there's lots of great resources online to give you kind of the first step of understanding a culture. So think about a culture that's particularly difficult for you and seek to better understand it. Almost any cultural behavior makes sense if I have a little bit more information. Doesn't mean that I agree with it, doesn't mean that I'm going to necessarily use it, but can I at least seek to understand why is it that they speak in an indirect way, or why is it that a deadline always gets missed, and seek to understand it. And then the last thing I would suggest is to find a cultural coach or broker, who's somebody who understands another culture that you're trying to work with and understands your own, that you can kind of come to unfiltered. That's one of the strategies I often can use. I'm going to a new place. Hey, even though I've studied this topic for a number of years, there are still some cultures that are very disorienting to me. I'm not sure what's going on. So I find somebody else that I can just speak to frankly and say, okay, help me understand this. This is what happened in the meeting today. Am I reading into something? And they can kind of help me make sense of it. And of course, that requires that you find someone who really has an understanding of that culture. But that can be a great way to do it as well. There's also a number of resources on our website at culturalq.com. Individuals can take an assessment of their cultural intelligence. And there's a number of free resources that just allow people to do some more reading on this topic as well.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jack.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.